Yo, man,
Hey.
how's it going?
What's up, dude? Nice to finally meet you.
Same. We were this is our second one today, so Omar and I are all fired up. We
Oh, okay. Sick. Nice to meet you,
Isaac, what's
Omar.
up, man?
Omar's producing this podcast.
Got it.
And how'd you guys link up? Because Omar actually sent me your info, your Instagram, saying like, "Hey, why don't we get this guy on?" And I said, "Oh, I know him."
The way I came across your stuff was Nick, you had posted something about it a while ago. And then I checked that. I was like, oh, this riffified shit is dope. And then he just started, like, Isaac, you just started showing up on my TikTok. I was like, fuck yeah. You know, you're doing stuff, which is
Dude.
great. I got other friends that, since they follow like Bert Kreischer and Tom Segura, they're liking your posts. So it's just like, oh, sick. This is really
That's
cool.
awesome, man.
You're nailing it.
Yeah? I
Yeah.
feel like Beavis.
You're doing a great job.
Yeah, dude, the TikTok thing has been like blowing up, and like the one I did with Eric Andre, like he, I like we talked a bit in the past when I first posted that video, but then I reposted it as like a reel, and he accepted like the collaborator request, so it's like on his page now, and we've like talked about it stuff together, and it just kept snowballing. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
that's a dream come true. That is one of my most favorite moments in stand-up comedy I've ever
Oh
seen.
my
Like
gosh.
from before you posting it, just like from being at home watching, his like just stand up, wherever I can. I'm a big stand-up fan. I love stand-up comedy. But
Same, dude.
that joke, not even a joke, it's just him just telling a story is the
That performance.
fucking best thing
It
ever.
is, dude, it is. I've literally, that's my favorite stand-up special of all time. I've watched it 6 times. I've shown it all my friends. I think he is just a genius, man. And dude, it's so insane. When I first posted it, probably over a year at this point, I think I tagged him and I was just like, "Yo, dude, like love you." Like, expecting for him to never see it. And he like saw it and shared it. And he's like, "Dude," he's like, "I'm gonna talk to the network. We're gonna get you to do the whole special. Like, I'm gonna like have them like pay you to like riffify the whole thing." And I was like, I'm like, the fact that you've been talking to me is crazy right now. And it like never went anywhere, of course, but I was like, I'm like, dude, like he's into it, man. I think he's a Berkeley guy. So it's like he gets, our world, I think. He's like a jazz
Oh
bassist.
yeah. He studied bass. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was Berkeley. It could have been. I have no idea, but I
Oh
know
my
he
gosh.
studied jazz bass. So he's got the same brain,
He does, man. He does. And
I'm pretty sure
yeah.
he produced that Thundercat Turbotron video.
Oh shit.
Oh, did he really? I've not looked into this at all. I don't know, let's check it out. It's Eric Andre Thundercat.
That's a sick collab.
Oh, he was on the Eric Andre show. Thundercat was on the Eric Andre show.
It's funny, I can't I like I love the Eric Andre show to death, but I've tried to binge it and I just get like my brain can only handle so much. It's like it's
And
so much.
yeah, it's definitely one of my favorite things to put on. And I can't really watch it with anybody, especially like my wife does not get that humor whatsoever.
Yeah.
So it's more of all right, no one's home. I guess I'm gonna watch Eric Andre.
Oh,
Yeah,
100%. Are you into like Tim and Eric at all?
back in the day when that was, regularly on Adult Swim and stuff, but absolutely.
Oh my
Yeah.
God. Same. It's the same to me. It's like the same part
The
of the brain.
next generation of that, because he's a little bit more aggressive. I think he's got to be younger than them as well.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that was a while ago. And Check It Out with Steve Brule, John C. Reilly, like all that shit. It's just, oh my God.
Yeah,
It's so.
my favorite ones are the dark ones, like Uncle Muscles, like when they're kind of
Oh yeah, dude.
where they're just like dancing in a dark room and have like really depressing makeup on their face, like they
It's
just
like almost
were.
not that funny. It's just you're like you get kind of worried or you're like, what's going
Yeah, I'm
on?
like, I hope they're safe. I hope they're
Yeah.
okay.
That's kind of why I couldn't totally handle, like, I think I watched 3 episodes of Eric Andre's show in a row, and I'm like, dude, I need a break. Like, I need to like be grounded back to reality, because like, I don't know if you've ever been to his website. I don't know if it's still this way, but I went to his site like way back in the day, and it's just like his face on the body of a centipede that just like keeps going as the more you scroll down, and at the top it says like comedy does not exist, and like psychedelic fun. It's just like, it's so insane, and that's I love it, man. I can't get enough of that shit.
Yeah, yeah. I think I have seen that. So you work for Strandberg, right?
Yeah, I run our artist relations and social media.
Nice. It seems like you're just like popping off. Like, I came across the Eric Andre thing, and you know, you had, I don't know, 9,000 something followers, and then I'm kind of stalking you a little bit also because I knew you were coming on here and I wanted to mention it. Mm-hmm. You know, next thing you know, you're like approaching 11,000 followers, and it seems like you're cranking out these like this short form content more mm-hmm. so now than even like a month ago. It was more just like, you know, songs, original songs and playthroughs and stuff. And
mm-hmm.
so to me, it looks like just recently you've kind of come across this cool project of like writing heavy riffs to, you know, things that you like, and people like it too. Mm-hmm. I know I like it.
I think yeah. It's great.
Is
thanks,
that,
man.
Is that accurate? Is this like a new thing that you kind of started doing?
So it's funny. So I made the first Riffified like probably 2 years ago for this. The Facebook group called Strandberg Spark, which is like our Strandberg kind of community. And it's this kind of like creative Facebook group where we put out these prompts every 2 weeks, and people make content based on these prompts. It's like a fun kind of community building thing, kind of Strandberg themed. And so I did one of these with, actually speaking of comedians, it was John Mulaney's Delta Airlines bit, where he's talking about how Delta Airlines is like framed him for murder and stuff. And it's like one of my favorite bits. And so I like played guitar along to it. Just, I forget what the prompt was, but people loved it. And like, I think Metal Sucks wrote it up and got a bunch of coverage and stuff. And I was like, oh, it's like, okay, there's like something here. And for me, it's like, I love heavy, heavy technical proggy, weird music. And I love comedy. And I just like to keep things like positive and lighthearted, like all the time. That's kind of my jam. Mm-hmm. So it scratched a lot of those itches for me. And so I just kind of started doing it. And I have probably, I think at least 30 Riffified videos that I've done since then, from a while ago. And they started out, like I did one with Alex Jones and just kind of like all these viral clips that I feel like most people know, like cartoons and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they started out as these like kind of like longer form videos. And when I said longer form, I guess they're like a minute to a minute and a half, because that's as long as my brain can handle that music. But and I was like kind of killing myself over it, because they took so long to like write, record, edit, film, like all this stuff. And so I started kind of like refining them to be shorter and kind of more easily digestible and just honestly easier to produce over the past like year or so. And then when Reels on Instagram kind of became a thing, I was like, oh, I should like kind of repost a lot of this older stuff on social media and just kind of get it back out there, because like, no, you know, no one really knew about it. And mm-hmm. I figured like, why not? So I reposted a couple of the older ones, which I think are on my page now more recently. Mm-hmm. And I did one, the one that kind of kickstarted this whole thing recently was this Gibbon like screaming. And I just like chugged on my eight string, just the most like kind of like layman's gent, just like mm-hmm. no real creative effort. Just like, I'm just like, oh, just like I'll match the rhythm. It'll be easy. It'll be fun. Whatever. Big meme value. And it hit like, it's like a, like 1.7 million views. And it was like the first like proper viral thing. And I was like, okay, like people love animals, people love gent. I can like work with that. And we can talk about this, like we can go in depth with this, but like that does nothing for me as an artist. Like creatively, I can just chug to like a monkey screaming all day. And like, I you know, it's funny. It doesn't really like scratch any, mm-hmm. again, scratch that part of my brain, but people seem to like it. And
it does something. I mean, it brings people to your music. You know,
yeah,
like I think a lot of us are trying to find new ways to bring people to our music, because mm-hmm. So how do you know me? How do you know, because you
dude, so I first heard about you from Everforth, right? Like way back in the day, I was like super into your guys, to that album.
Yeah.
And I basically followed your music ever since then, like with your solo stuff and No Band and Stimpy Lockjaw, and just like, and Everforth was the first like kind of prog metal band that I heard really exploring like jazz harmony like you guys did. Mm-hmm. And I just saw you play and I was like, dude, like what is this guy? And then the Seymour Duncan solo, which I think is the greatest solo of all time, dude. I tried to learn it. It's the hardest piece of music I've ever played. You're like, I don't want to gush, but like you're literally like top three favorite guitarists of mine. Like you've influenced my playing beyond what you know, dude. Like,
oh man, just, I appreciate like, that.
It's you're I go to your page every day and I'm like, dude, I like you. Dude, and like I run like artist relations, so I see a million guitarists every day just being like, oh, endorse my band, send me free guitars, like check out my band. Yeah. And it's so much of the same stuff. And a lot of it's great, but you have such your jazz theory knowledge, and I always like feel like I describe your playing as very like very angular to people. And I'm like he just like has the notes. He just has all the notes all the time, knows how to navigate anything. And I'm just a massive fan, dude. Yeah.
Oh man, I really appreciate it. Well, thanks, dude. How do I get out of that?
Well, that's how I know about you. So I just love your shit, man. I think you're a monster.
Oh, thanks. So back when Everforth was like the first real thing I ever released, I was like 21 years old or something.
Yeah.
I mean, Everforth had demos before that. You know, sans Crisperetto, pre-Crisperetto. And, you know, no, it didn't really go anywhere. It didn't really pick up. And then kind of prog metal hit this like point where Periphery and Everforth, right? And then everything kind of just came out in like year, what was that, like 2009, 10, 11, right?
Yeah. In that range. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I would put out videos of me playing guitar in my bedroom on YouTube, and then overnight get like 10,000 views. And, and I don't think it was because, you know, what I was playing was like super miraculous, but, or like we'd put something on SoundCloud and, you know, thousands of views or anything we posted anywhere was just like, poof, it's hit. You know, some personal life things happened where I couldn't really write or record music for a period of time. And in the past few years, I've been able to get back into it. And I just feel like the world has changed so much. You know, putting out stuff it's so challenging now to get people to hear your music. So, you know, like this podcast is an effort to just kind of explore other ways to talk to people and build relationships and access other people's audiences to kind of say, you know, hey, I'm writing music over here. And so one of those things also seems to be that didn't exist a decade ago is short form content. And this is my first time seeing like short form content really work and do something.
Yeah. Dude, and it's like it's part of the brand, you know. You kind of have to have that I don't know, your finger in the marketing pie, so to speak. And I think it's like, I think as artists, especially as musicians, like we always have to be a billboard for ourselves, but now it's like that times infinity because everyone's doing it and everyone has the tools to make sick content. And so there's that kind of pressure of like you have to be putting out stuff. And I kind of flip-flop on it because I'm really deep into the social media stuff. I'm always looking at Instagram guitarists and TikTok stuff, and there's apps that are coming and going. But it's like there's this pressure as an artist to also make content, which has pros and cons. But I think if you can do it in a way that's sincere and like taps into a thing that you're already sort of known for and is like a genuine interest of yours, I think that's kind of the most successful way to do it. But you're right, like it didn't really exist, you know, a decade ago. And I think that's almost my theory is that part of the reason those videos took off back in the day is because the infrastructure wasn't so like saturated with everyone making these videos. So the videos that were made like stood out a lot and got a lot more traction. And then obviously like prog metal was just people were doing new stuff.
Yeah, there's so much of it now as well. One of the first videos we did was me playing along to Dispose of Your Optimism in Billy's, the other guitar player's bedroom. And I don't even know if that video is still on. I mean, it would be cool if it was still on YouTube just as like a stamp in time. Like, yeah, at a point, like this is how playthroughs looks. You just kind of rolled your webcam and,
dude, you know, so DIY.
And like, yeah, like the pristine playthrough wasn't quite a thing yet. I think it was just starting to happen. And for me, it's challenging too, the short form content stuff, because for several reasons. One, I'm just a guitar player. Like I like to write music, and I like to think about music and study music and, you know, practice. I like to play and practice the guitar. Like it doesn't get much more brass tacks you know, than that. Mm-hmm. To also to now focus on learning like Adobe Premiere to edit video.
And... Dude, exactly. Like, when did you ever think like when you first picked up a guitar for the first time, you're like, okay, I'm gonna have to learn my keystrokes for Premiere one day. Like,
no, I didn't think that. And for a while, I was trying to do something, but to me, it's not worth it. Like, I'm not able to make this the art that I want to make if I also have to do that. Yes. Maybe if I like. Had a very different life, but I have I've got my second son on the way at this point.
Oh man, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
So I'm a busy dad. I do other stuff just to make money because I'm not making, you know, I'm not paying my mortgage from selling, you know, like my atonal, you know, guitar riffs and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love doing it, but it's not really paying the bills.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with what little time I have, I just want to be so passionate about what I'm doing. So I've pretty much said, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not learning Adobe Premiere. I'm not doing it. So this actually works for me. This, the podcast, because it allows me to be who I am. I can talk about music to people that I like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thankfully I have my buddy here helping me out, kind of producing it, you know. So this isn't really short form content, but I don't know. It's something. It's some kind of content. Yeah, I guess if like there was some silly, ridiculous clip that we could pull out of here.
I mean, I think that's a big part of it is sort of like, you know, you get to a point where your time is super valuable and you don't want to be doing anything else than the thing you want to do. And I don't know if like this quick little side tangent, but do you know Gear Gods, the YouTube channel?
I know of it. I don't know too much about what they're posting anymore, but
sure. So Trey from Gear Gods, we've been roommates for like 5 years. And so I like worked with him for a long time and I was doing like all his video stuff and social media. Mm-hmm. And we always had this relationship where he would shoot the videos, I would edit them, but then he just kind of what we're talking about now, he just wanted to focus on making videos and just doing the thing that he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And then he would offload all the other stuff to your boy and he would pay me in money and I would like, you know, I would do all the stuff he didn't want to do. I think that's kind of the move if you can like outsource. I mean, obviously you got Omar and you have like, you know, people helping out with the stuff. I think that's the move, you know, because then
to find some kind of symbiosis with somebody else. Yeah.
Yep. And if you're a dad, if you have limited time, but like some money, you know, from like a day job or whatever, like you're putting that into some sort of content production engine where you don't even have to touch it. It's just people taking the clips, you know, someone else can sit through this podcast, take some juicy clips, put text over it, put music, and then upload that. And you're just like, cool, looks good. And then, so like, therefore you're not spending any time on it. And, but you still get the kind of the extra juice from it, so to speak.
Yeah.
I see a lot of people doing that. And, it's funny because I've always been the person doing that for other people, but now I'm kind of at the point where I'm like, I just want to play guitar, man. I just want to write riffs. Like,
That's funny that you said, like you have like Strandberg applications and it's like, oh brother, another one of these things. I just feel like in this, you know, wacky world of music, the one thing I do right is play the guitar. And everything else is like, I'm terrible at it. I don't produce video. I barely produce like I only just started engineering my own stuff from home with the Noah Band project. That the first EP from last year, I engineered from home and then sent it off to Adam Bentley from Adam Bentley. Oh, Archeco.
Yeah.
So he mixed it. And then this time around, I just got out of the studio for the second round of the Noah Band, some more songs. But this time I wanted to actually explore going to a studio and having a different, like someone else engineer and stuff. Just, you know, use real amps. I can't use real amps here. So I did that time around. What was my point? Nope, it's gone.
Shit. We'll edit this out. It's fine.
Yeah, just edit this part out, Omar.
Is this edited, by the way, this podcast?
Yeah.
Sick. Okay. Yeah. As an editor, I'm like, I wish I could just edit real life. It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't like I don't really produce. I don't really do too much engineering at home. I don't really I'm not making content so much. Man, I really wish I could find a way to. It'll probably come back to me, but
yeah. Well, it's interesting because I think so. Like I'm definitely with you. Like I think there's this sort of like dichotomy of like the artist and then like the business marketing brain. And I think the successful artists are the people that are able to do both to some extent.
Got it.
Yeah, I don't know if that's
I got it. So marketing is the other is also something that I've. It's not that I'm bad at it. I actually have a master's degree in marketing. Actually, that's my master's degree on the wall. Right.
Oh, nice.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm not. It's just a time thing. Like I don't have the time to really think about it. I suppose I could cut up my time differently, but I really, really just want to play the guitar. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all I want to do. So, Dude. So in terms of marketing, I don't think I've ever, maybe a handful of times I've sent kind of things to companies saying like, hey, this is who I am. Would like to get to know, you know, love to build a relationship. Maybe we can talk about, you know, X, Y, and Z, and we can scratch each other's back, but nothing has really ever panned out. Even like Ernie Ball Strings, I've tried reaching out to a few times. Just like, you know, throw me a 10% discount on some strings. I'm always buying your damn guitar strings. Throw me a damn
discount. That's super doable. Yeah, I feel you, man. It's sort of, I think time management's a big part of it. I know with Trey, because we've been talking a lot about like, you know, vertical short form content, like TikTok and stuff. And he's been like batch shooting a lot of it. So like for an afternoon on a Friday, he'll shoot, you know, 4 or 5 little videos and then send those to his editor to like deal with and kind of put up. So it's like the minimal amount of time that he's spending on it. Mm-hmm. I feel you, man. Like if all you want to do is play guitar and like just do one thing, like I think it's better to do that than try to force yourself to do something else that you feel like if you're doing something you don't want to be doing, your brain's kind of naturally going to be like, oh, but I could be playing guitar. I could be writing music. Like, yeah. And I think it can kind of like, I'm of this sort of opinion that I think everything is so polished these days on social media. Every artist is putting out like just the cream of the crop version of themselves. And I think there's sort of this craving in like the kind of zeitgeist of like people want authenticity. And I know I crave that. Like I'd rather see a dude just playing with his like, you know, camera audio on, or phone audio, playing guitar, playing some like amazing guitar parts. I'd rather see that than the most overly produced, you know, playthrough or music video. And I'm sure there's people that disagree with me, but I feel like it's just like, I don't know, it's so hard to like kind of set yourself apart these days with that stuff. Like,
yeah, that's interesting you say that, because like I've taken the couple extra minutes to if I'm playing something I like and I think, oh, you know, the Instagram world might like this too. I've done both things where I've, you know, propped up my phone and just kind of played it and posted it, or come over to this spot, plug in to my box here, run it through Logic, you know, pull up Helix Native or something and get a nice jazz tone. If I take the extra time to do it that way and then, you know, take that audio and actually mesh it with the video that I shot, even just like on like iMovie or something, because all I'm doing is matching video and it's not a big project. Those go over way better than coming straight through. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, it's still me playing the guitar. So I guess there's that. It's not like it's not a totally phony playthrough video. It's actually,
right.
I'm actually playing the guitar. So I guess it's still pretty authentic, but it does go over better in terms of views and shares and all that kind of stuff. If I take the extra time to actually come over here and record legit audio.
Right. And it can be, I found with the Riffified stuff, it can be really, like motivating to see people's feedback on stuff. Like I went through a pretty big burnout period for probably like 3 or 4 months, towards the beginning of this year, where I wasn't making any Riffified stuff because I just had a million other things going on. And I'm like, yeah, like they do okay. But like, I don't know. I feel like it wasn't getting the sort of the traction that I was hoping for. But then a couple of them like did really well. And I was like, I felt really good about the views and stuff. And I didn't like that. I liked that feeling. Like I didn't like that external validation felt so good.
Yeah.
But I couldn't lie about it. Like I'm like, man, like when that one hit a million views, I was like, dude, that's like, actually, that makes me want to make more stuff. And it's cool to like see it having a positive impact on people. And like for my stuff, it's mostly like an entertainment thing. So there's like a good handful of musicians who are like, dude, like, it's awesome. I love like the weird shit you're doing. But most of it's just like, ah, oh, dude, so funny. Like, LOL. And they're both encouraging. And I didn't realize like how motivating it would be to put out stuff and get that feedback. And so for me, it was like almost the opposite, where the when I started putting out stuff more consistently, I got more consistent feedback, and that has just kind of pushed me to like want to do it more, which is, that was never the setup that I thought would work for me. I just want to make stuff really, if I know, part of me is like, I know that if I'm not stoked on something, I won't do it for anyone else. Like, it doesn't matter how cool of a gig it is or who's going to see it. Like, if I'm not happy about it, like, I just won't, I can't find it within me to like do it. So there's almost a bit of like kind of just getting the ball rolling. And if you're able to have sort of a, you know, you post once a week, post 2-3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, like have some sort of basic kind of consistent schedule in place. For me, at least I found that to be very, very motivating, because it's almost like an accountability thing, you know,
consistency.
Yeah. And honestly, I think consistency is probably the biggest thing to focus on. Like, even if it's, you're not doing these big overly produced videos and stuff, like if you just post at a consistent rate, you know, just the videos of you playing guitar, maybe sync up some audio that you recorded, maybe it's just the phone audio, but as long as it's consistent and you kind of build this like expectation with your fan base, I think that's way better than trying to get all the fancy lighting and stuff. And then because then you like sit down and you're like, you're not even thinking about guitar, you're thinking about a million other things that are just kind of irrelevant, you know.
Yeah,
and I mean, yeah, that's kind of my opinion in terms of just like, yeah, social stuff.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on consistency. I don't think I'll ever be the guy that is doing like the best lighting and best video. I mean, I'd like to get this as we do this podcast more and more. I'd love to, you know, maybe change how it looks, get a better microphone, you know, possibly throw a cooler backdrop in or something like that. But I don't see myself being like the super clean cut playthrough guitar guy. Yeah. It's not what I do. It doesn't feel right. If anything, what feels right for me is to just double down on the whole, you know, what you see is what you get kind of thing. Like,
yeah, man.
Like, next time I'm in the studio, doing, you know, some video of tracking the guitars, or if what I'd love to do eventually with the Noah band is a live recording session. So everyone playing at the same time.
Sick.
I couldn't do that this time around because of like the ability to rehearse. It was really challenging with, like, you know, COVID was like off the walls again, and the bassist was having a child, and you know, everyone was super busy to put together, you know, 10 rehearsals and get a four-piece band to the point where we can comfortably go into a studio, hit record, and just play with one another and have it be perfect.
Yeah,
that's a lot of work. Yeah. So I'd love to do that eventually, maybe next time. And you know, that's the kind of thing I would love to have a camera rolling for. Like, that's something that you don't really see very much of. Like, oh shit, this is just four guys playing.
Like, yeah, and that's as authentic as it gets. You know, I mean, you're all just like, there's no funny business, there's no editing, there's no cuts. Like, it's just like you and your skill. And I think that's huge, man. That's the shit that I love. That's like what gets me going.
Yeah,
it's like, I don't know, anyone can mime along to stuff. I think it's it shows like just how true musicians you guys are, and like how I don't know, it's just like authentic, it's just real. It's just like,
I gotta do it first. Yeah, but that being said, at the end of this month, I am also doing a video for the Noah band stuff that I just recorded, which is going to require that I fake along with some stuff. So, like, you know, it is what it is. Like,
it is what it is, man.
It is what it is.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Any, I feel like, so I just listened to the one, the episode, I think last episode with Jacob, I think, and I think you're talking about new Ever Forthright stuff. I'm curious, like, is anything, how's that coming along?
That's happening. I mean, it's being mixed. Like, I just got, the epic on the album is this song called Tech Influx that is like, is probably like a teenager. It's probably like 13 years old, that song. And it was actually like one of the first ever forthright songs that I ever wrote. And it was like the first version of it was maybe 3.5 minutes long. And then we had met Chris, and Chris started picking songs to do vocals to, and somehow this one didn't make the cut. You know, he picked one song and another song. Next thing you know, we had 60 minutes of like, I think 72 minutes. How long is that first album? Very long.
72 minutes, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, we had some songs left over, and this song was like one of the ones that was left over. And then we just kept on working on it. We're like, you know, the song has, we forgot about a bunch of the others, but we're this song has something here. We worked on it. We had writing sessions with the keyboard player at the time. And then this song eventually grew to being like this 13 minute, just, you know, prog metal epic.
My man.
So that's the mix we got back today. So I was like downstairs making a coffee, and then I got a text from Billy, the other guitar player, who's been talking to George Lever, the guy mixing it. He's like, here's the first mix of Tekken Flux. And it was like, whoa, we're here. We're at this moment where like,
we sound like a band.
It sounds real. Yeah. And it's like, it's been like years. Like I'm pretty sure 13 years since that song was first recorded on like, you know, Cubase 4 or something. I don't know. And
that's amazing.
Now I'm getting a text saying, here's like your first pass at a finished mix of this song that you've been working on for like 13 mm-hmm. years. So that much is crazy. And to have Jacob on it, to have real drums on it. There's like a 2-minute jazz guitar solo on it. It's got like the works. It's really like our it's like our baby. It's crazy. It's,
dude, that, what a feeling, man. Congratulations, dude. Cannot wait to hear that shit, dude.
Thanks.
Oh
yeah.
My God.
So yeah, but yeah, to your question, it's all coming. And then we've gotten mixes of like 4 or 5 other songs the past couple of weeks. Yeah, it's happening. We're trying to parallel path working, getting some art together. Yeah, so that, I guess that brings me on to the next thing. Like, releasing music these days is now different from how it used to be. You know, we woke up one day in like early December and said, hey, we should put out the album this month. Should we just release it in a week? Okay, sure. And then we put out the album like December something. Just, you know, just like, all right, cool, we got it. Like, I guess this is what you do, right? You just kind of release music and you put it out in the world. And I think it hit number one on Bandcamp for a little while. And which is apparently really hard to do now.
It's a whole like process to it, right? Like a whole album cycle. It takes so long.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone would dream of putting out just 72 minutes of music in like just one shot just now, you know. Mm-hmm. Now people are like, I only recently learned about waterfall release strategies. You know, you put out one song and then 3 weeks later put out another song, a couple weeks later put out the next song, and mm-hmm. And the way the
singles,
yeah, the singles, and then the singles all are technically the same ISRC. They're the exact same track that are connected to the final album when the final album is released. So I think we'll probably try to do that, but it's going to be our first time, just kind of like a bunch of old men, just like, okay, what are these kids doing? Waterfall release strategy?
And dude, that's so funny. Like, my band's kind of in a similar position. Like, we're like a lot younger than you guys, but we're in the process of putting out our second album, hopefully at the end of this year, and working with the label and stuff. And I can't say too much, but we're in that same kind of like boat of like this next, you know, few month period is going to be our whole kind of marketing campaign. And it's so weird to think about, because our first album we just like put out one day. We're like, here's an hour of prog metal, and like we do, our whole sort of approach is all of our songs just like flow into each other. It's like one long continuous piece of music, kind of like Colors by BT Bam. Mm-hmm. We're like just long prog songs, and so this album is a continuation of our first album, and so there's like so much that has to go into it. Like, none of the songs are like really singleable. We put out one single since then, and it was one of the more kind of easily digestible tunes, but mm-hmm. they're all so long, they're all so just so weird. There's like,
oh yeah,
so
that makes it, that makes it challenging if you've kind of turned it into a concept album, because it kind of,
yeah,
the way it stitches into the next thing. So I'm doing that with the video that I'm recording, that I'm doing in a couple weeks, where the songs are separate. So the songs are very singleable. I could put out singles, okay, and it'll be a piece of cake. But our plan for the video is to have all the video connect. So like,
ooh.
Yeah, so it isn't just a playthrough, it's kind of a playthrough music video combination. And so I'll release the songs in track order. And if I release it on YouTube, here's the first video. The second video will come out a couple weeks later, and it's actually a continuation of the first video. And then the third video is a continuation.
I love that shit, dude.
Thanks. I didn't come up with it. The cinema guy came up with it. So, but I'm paying.
But that's a nice, that's a good way to keep, to just kind of rope people in. It's like I think a lot of like conceptual stuff, because I don't know if you know like The Deer Hunter, another great kind of, tons of like conceptual stuff. And so I always think with songs and albums that have like an underlying story, I almost think of it like you're watching a TV show, like watching a series, and you sort of like get people in at the pilot, and that's when you sort of kind of get people along for the ride. So I love that this video concept of like people are almost like watching episodes of the songs, and pull them in that way. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a good way to think of it. Being a musician nowadays is so much more than just being a bunch of guys that write songs, or being a solo artist that write songs. Like, you really have so many means of being creative: short form content, long form content, videos, podcasts, like, and educational things. That's something I haven't really tapped into yet, but could probably really work for me, is a three chord progression that I'm obsessed with at the moment, or a new approach to the whatever scale that you could try using in your solos. You know, that's probably something that could work for me, because I've always been like the theory guy.
Playing Anything From Anywhere, right? I have that on my computer somewhere. I like went through it like ages ago, and it was so sick. And there's like, I feel like everyone needs to know about that, especially if you're like into the kind of jazz world, and if you have a knack for like improvisation. Like, there's you could take any page out of that and turn that into some little thing. Yeah, man.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thanks.
It's highly shareable too. I think people like get a little lesson of something, and they're like, oh, my buddy could use this, and then there's a lot of kind of like reshare value, and then in tandem with that, like, you're kind of building your brand, you're building what you're known for. Tons of value in that.
So even I was listening to some podcast the other day where they had like a 5-minute Friday. I think every Monday was their long form podcast, then Fridays they released a 5-minute mini thing that was just like, I think it was like a health podcast, like hey, a quick tidbit for making a healthy breakfast: try adding oatmeal to your smoothies, and you'll have oatmeal in your smoothies. So that's something I've just kind of been thinking of in my head. 5-minute Fridays could be like music education, and Mondays could be like the long form podcast like we're doing right now. So yeah, but my point being is this kind of thinking it's like firing off a new part of my brain I haven't had to use before, and it's just kind of exploring different options now. And also, Everforthright has done really well, like in the cult world. Like, I think it came out at the right time, and it did the music kind of spoke for itself, and we didn't market that one tiny bit. I think we also went on like three kind of smallish tours. I think in total, Everforthright may have played like less than 50 shows.
Dang.
Yeah, we didn't really...
Was that on a label too?
No label. I mean, there was this one label, I don't even want to say its name, that didn't really do anything. I think at the time, a bunch of early 20-year-olds were like, oh, this guy said he's got a label. Okay, let's say we're on a label. And nowadays, I think people are a little bit smarter about that. So, but it didn't go anywhere. That didn't do a damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Ever Forth, right? Even in the days of Ever Forth, we weren't thinking of like a rollout plan or a marketing plan, or it was just you know, let's just put out the music, play some shows if they come our way, and that's it. So yeah,
simpler times.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, a bunch of my friends have kept the music thing going since then for, you know, 10 plus years now, who are masters of this. And I frankly kind of feel like I'm wasting their time asking them for advice, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, it is what it is, right?
Yeah. And I think, one thought that's been very helpful to motivate me to kind of do the more promotional stuff and market like my brand and like my band is to like, you're like, you're doing yourself a favor when you make this kind of extra content, because it could feel like a time suck of like, oh, like I'd rather just like put out my music now and just like let it kind of live there. But I think we had this conversation with this label we're working with, because we, you know, this album we've been working on, we started writing it before our first album was even out, and it's like at least I think it's like 6 years old at this point, like the actual material. It feels like so old to us, like we're like, who even wrote this? It's like it's our newest stuff, and we feel so removed from it. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, long, proggy, just weird, crazy. Like it's got everything in it. And we are like, because there's been so much build up to it, because it's been in the works for so long, we are just jonesing to release it into the world. And we're talking to the label, and some of the guys there, they're like, you know what? Like, we know you want to just put it out, but like, if you send it out to just your small Instagram following and your small like social media pages, like no one's really going to see it.
Yeah.
And it's true. And it's like, so you're actually doing yourself a big favor by doing the kind of, yeah, waterfall strategy, like marketing it, taking your time with it, and really like building up some momentum to actually have people who are on the receiving end of listening to it when it finally does come out, you know. And it sucks, right, as an artist who's like held on to this thing for I can't imagine a 13-year-old song like that is like,
oh my god,
just ready.
Yeah. And then the worst part is it was actually me that suggested today in our group chat when we got it, like, look guys, I know this is probably the last thing any of you want to hear, but should we do a music video for this? Which would mean like adding at least 6 months on to the release of this song, like finding a creative director to put together a plan for a 13-minute song, to shoot it, to raise the money for it, to edit it. At that point, you're like up to your neck in the responsibility to market it correctly. So now you really got to think of a marketing plan.
100%.
And I think everyone was just kind of like, no, fuck that. Like, we've waited.
Like, how can we make this harder on us?
Yeah. I mean, at a certain point,
there's only so much you can do, right?
Only so much you can do. Like, is a video for this song really going to be worth the additional, you know, amount of time it takes for, you know, to come out? And I honestly, I think even, you know, you can't really have a 13-minute band playthrough video. Like, we would have to get actors in there and create some kind of storyline to keep a 13-minute video engaging.
So totally.
It would just get wildly expensive. And I think that in itself would just kind of crush it in its tracks. But you know, but the Noah Band stuff, that is happening. I will have video for that. And the day that I got off the phone for the first time with the guy shooting the video, I was like, oh man, I just bought myself like another 2 months of having to wait to put this out. But I feel really good about it in this case.
I think it's going to be a worthwhile.
Yeah. I feel more comfortable with. I don't have the pressure of having, it's not like a second Ever Forthright that people have been waiting a decade plus for. It's kind of my own thing. So whatever happens, I'm the only one feeling the repercussions. Whereas Ever Forth, it's a bit of a group project,
for sure.
So
do you feel like those the two projects sort of like I don't know, like balance themselves out, or do you feel like it's sort of nice to have the no band stuff as like a sort of relief from how crazy Ever Forth it is? Like, because I feel like it's nice to have that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I always just kind of thought whatever I write, I'll just give to Ever Forth, right? But what I find is then we end up with a backlog of 45 songs that, you know, we don't know what to do with. At the end of the day, you're going to hit a bottleneck because you need input from other people. So now I've kind of just like partitioned my brain. Like, is this going to be an Ever Forthright song? Let me approach it this way. Is this going to be a Nick Laurenti song? You know, whatever I want to call it, the Noah band. I might, you know, I kind of want to write more strat based music, like single coily strat stuff. I would like to do like a real straight ahead jazz project. So yeah. So,
here's a question. How do you organize your like song ideas, either like on your phone or your computer? Like, cause half my shit's just like heavy jingle two Isaac solo vibe. And it's like, I'm like, it's so, I have no system in place. Like, how do you do it?
You mean you've already recorded it and now it's got to sit in some kind of directory on your computer?
Like a little demo or a little like voice memo or something.
So if I'm tracking, like my Logic files are called, so for my Noah band stuff, I have Roman numeral one, which is the first EP, and then songs 1, 2, 3, 4. Roman numeral two is the new stuff I did. Songs 1, 2, 3, 4. And I don't have names for these songs until, you know, like I only just named the four tracks of the new stuff the other day when the video guy said, hey, I need song names. I was like, all right, here they are. And I kind of spent.
Dude, it's so funny how people like, because like for our stuff, it's so conceptual that we like start with the name most of the time and then work backwards. Because it's like, okay, like in the story at this part of the story, what's happening with the main character? What's the, and we like have the name, and then the name sort of like embodies like the vibe we're going for.
Yeah.
But I feel like some of the more successful like things that I've just written for my own personal stuff, it's like Isaac Techie idea one, and it's because there's no expectation put on it with a proper name. You're just like, here's the song idea. I want it to speak for itself, and then I'll name it like later on.
That's exactly what I do. I name everything later on. So yeah, my songs are called 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 until I'm ready to name it. Because also, if you name
that, dude.
Because also, if you name something three, the second you give something a working title, you call something like heavy. You know, song three is heavy. It can never. It can never. You've kind of forced it to
be a certain thing.
To be a thing. Mm-hmm. So if I have this idea one day for song three that involves like somehow getting out of this heavy section and getting into like a different kind of feel, you know, now I'm kind of hitting this blockade in my brain, like, oh wait, but I call it heavy. Should I change the working title? Should it be called heavy, heavy to not heavy?
Like, yeah.
So yeah, you
can pigeonhole yourself a little bit.
Yeah. So I think for me, numbering has always just been the way to go.
I'm going to take that and see if that helps us out in future.
Or I'm going to give a master class someday, like, and introducing Nick Laurenti. Like, okay, guys, what you want to do is you don't want to name your songs. You just call your songs 1, 2, 3, 4 and you'll be good to go. Thanks.
Yeah. No one can say it's heavy or not heavy. It's just number three. That's number all
three. Okay. Where's my check?
Just walk off.
That's awesome, man. I actually like, and let me know if you want to like kind of stay on the social media stuff, but I am genuinely curious about like your writing process with this stuff, because it's a thing like we've been focusing on with my band, is like working more on like themes and just tighter songwriting. Cause I think, especially for a lot of the prog stuff, like, we have a song on the album, on the new album that's coming out, that's over 10 minutes. And I love it. It's awesome. It's just like every idea, and there's threads, you know, throughout that kind of keep it together. But I guess for you, like, how do you start writing like a, let's say an Ever Forthright song? Are you thinking of like a little nugget of a riff or a theme, or does someone else bring something?
It's hard to say for Ever Forthright, cause I haven't written an Ever Forthright song in like 2 years. Like these are all songs that have been like done, and then it was finding a vocalist, that cat's out of the bag, like, you know, we had to find another vocalist. Then we thought it'd be a good idea to get to have Jacob redo the bass, and so those songs are old, but I mean I guess it's all the same. The way I write is the way I write. I usually have a note a notepad. My phone is being used right now to get this video, but I have like a, on my Apple, like whatever it's called, note app. I have a note in there called Noah 1 Inspiration, Noah 2 Inspiration, and now I have Noah 3 Inspiration. And anytime I'm listening to something, I kind of just like if I'm in the car and I hear a song that I like, I just jot it down. And it could be the vibe that I like of the song, it could be the chord progression. And so in my like Noah 2 Inspiration note app, there's probably like 30 songs in there that I just captured and inspired, you know, not all that I used, but I just spent time with each of those songs, and somehow those turned into a piece of music.
Gotcha. And so you're starting with like a kind of a mood or a feeling or an intent, and then building it out from there.
Yeah, like I'll sit down to say, okay, I am writing today, and that's a consistent. That's always what I do. I sit down and I say, like, okay, I'm going to write for the next 2 hours. So I got 2 hours to write. Pull up my note app, and I go through a list of songs that I've been like kind of earworms, things I've been really listening to, or not even songs. Sometimes they're exercises or concepts, or you know, I watched like a masterclass on YouTube, and the guy was saying, you know, oh, check out this, you know, new like augmented asymmetrical wacky scale. And even that just might be enough for me to pull out my piano, which I guess is step two. Piano is a big part of my writing process. So I'm usually tinkering with chords on the piano. And often the very beginnings of my Logic files are just all like programmed piano and bass. Like I'm just kind of like recording a piano part, putting like a melody on top of it. And these are all just like placeholder sounds, things I'm not really committed to. Mm-hmm. And then they just kind of grow from there. But I'm super, super patient with my writing process. Like, do I like this chord progression? Should I change it? What's the melody? What should the melody be?
Yeah. It's important to be methodical, I think, not rush through it if it doesn't feel like, cause then you kind of force things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so, my process can also be way simpler than that too. I might hear like Josh Travis come out with some crazy heavy thing, and I'll put in my notepad, write something heavier than Josh Travis.
Like, that's a challenge, man.
Yeah, but you know, you shoot for the stars and you land, you know, you land wherever.
Yeah. I think it was Gandhi who said that.
Yeah.
Do you find yourself writing away from the guitar more so than not, or do you like write on the guitar a good amount of the time too?
I usually like refine on the guitar, but I write on the piano.
That I think is super interesting, because the players that inspire me the most, like some of these guys, I've heard them in interviews say like they like hate the sound of the guitar. They hate like guitar-y sounds. And that's kind of like where I fall in a lot of ways. Like there are certain like intervals and things that I just never really want to use because it doesn't sound modern or cool, like whatever I'm trying to go for. And I think a lot of it, it's like almost trying to remove the guitar from the music as much as possible, and then writing on it, writing with MIDI or on a synth or keyboard or whatever, and then bring that back onto the guitar. I think like that's the stuff that inspires me the most. Like,
yeah, you know. It goes for melodies, it goes both ways. I'll write chord progressions, I almost never write on the guitar. I find like I come up with nice, much better voicings and voice leading stuff on the piano, and then I figure out how to do it on the guitar. Melodies can go both ways. Melodies, sometimes I start on the guitar because if I write a melody on the piano and I bring it to the guitar, sometimes the fingering is so messed up that I kind of don't want to play it anymore. Like, sure. I've definitely gotten to that situation where, oh, there's like too many back-to-back fourths here that like sounding,
it's always the fourth, man.
Yeah, just weird stuff like that. So I've actually been writing, taking progressions I write on the piano, and then figuring out melodies on the guitar. That's something I've been doing more of recently. And then riffs also can go both ways. Sometimes I'll come up with like a cool bass line on the piano, or and then it'll sound great on the guitar. But sometimes if I want a riff, I'll actually have the progression in front of me, like, okay, there's four bars of this, four bars of this, four bars of this, four bars of this. And mm-hmm. and then I'll write a riff with that as my framework. And then like the output of that may not allude to that progression whatsoever, but the riff sounds good nonetheless. So no one would ever think, oh, he's outlining these four chords here. It's so obvious, I can hear it. Like sometimes that's not the outcome. Sometimes it's just a sick riff. And mm-hmm. and then after a couple of months, I even forget where it came from. Like how the hell did I write this? And
usually, yeah. That's a cool like kind of external like tool to have for reference, so to help kind of guide you through that creative process. I've had a few demos where I'll like, it'll be like, I was listening to a lot of like Revocation 1 week. I'm like, oh, Revocation idea 3, cool. And then I try to like do my ripoff Dave Davidson impersonation with those riffs, and it becomes like something totally different. But like in my mind, it's always going to be like a Revocation thing, but it doesn't sound that way to anyone else. And, yeah.
And that's cool. You know? That's fine. And the less people know about it, the better.
Yeah. Not wearing your inspirations on your sleeves so much.
Yeah. Or even not knowing your writing process too much. That's another tough part about, you know, Everforthright versus whatever stuff I'm doing solo wise is they often know what is inspiring a particular track. And so the feedback to something I write is, oh, it sounds too much like this, it sounds too much like that. And I'm like,
right,
just shut up. It's because you know that.
Yeah.
No one would
out of the equation.
Yeah.
100%.
So, yeah. So, yeah. But the reason the Noah Band exists is because it's just a nice outlet for me to write something without feedback from other people. Like,
too many cooks in the kitchen.
Too many cooks. Yeah. But both are good. Both are good. Sure. Both projects are great. But for me, if all I'm doing is like if at the end of the day all I want to do is play and write music, then I need to have both for, you know, that's for me.
100%. Yeah, those different channels, and I feel like it's removing those barriers to like get the desired outcome is really important. Like I know for me, like even just in my recording space, like I've arranged my room in such a way where I can just have an idea, grab a guitar, have a preset and just go and just like record it with as minimal kind of, you know, obstruction as possible. And it's really important to have those different outlets for in like band context too, because you have like your super proggy heavy stuff where it's like it takes a lot of time, a lot of people involved. If your solo stuff, which you can just kind of churn out, you have like a, you know, maybe like a lighter jazz thing. Like, and I think it's all those things kind of relate to each other in one way or another.
Let me ask you two quick questions before we go. Yeah. One, on the inspiration and go piece, the ability to pick up a guitar and track some stuff. Do you have arms on your chair?
I do. This chair, I don't know what brand of chair this is. It's super sick. I got it at like a used furniture store. I thought the arms would be a problem and they're not. So I back the arms, dude. Hashtag back the arms.
You do? Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting.
How about you?
No, I don't. I feel like this particular chair I like for everything but recording in. I changed to a drum throne when I'm writing and recording. I switch over to a backless, armless drum throne, just as little obstruction as possible. With this, I find like, okay, I got to track guitar. I got to like get to the front of my seat and like my nuts are all squished, and then I got to sit a certain way. And then I got to sit here. And then like my right leg is supporting most of my weight, so it's just not good ergonomically. So I have to, I get rid of this chair. And so I don't really have an inspiration and go thing. It's more of a, like, I find my time to write and then that's when I do it.
Right. What you just said about everything you have to do to like shift and be comfortable, that's exactly what I do. So maybe I'm just like, doesn't everyone do that? Maybe not. Really? You gotta get a stool. That's the move.
Yeah, drum throne. I think it's the rock'em sock'em drum throne. What is it? It's called?
Oh, man.
What
the fuck is it? With a name like that.
Yeah, rock, best drum thrones. That's pretty much how I found it.
That's the sock'em bop'em brand.
Gotcha.
Best drum throne, sock'em bop'em.
We blow it up.
Rock'em sock'em, if you're listening, we got to get some affiliate links going.
Rock and sock nitro hydraulic drum throne. Rock and sock nitro. I'm gonna copy paste this so I can put it in the notes. It's pretty much the only note I took this entire podcast. So Nick and Isaac talk about one thing.
Which is the best drum stool.
Yeah. Last question. Is Reels, Instagram Reels versus posts, are you finding a difference in where you post? Like,
absolutely. Reels is the move. Yeah. So basically every platform, so Instagram, Facebook, even like LinkedIn, they're all, YouTube too, they're all trapping TikTok.
They're competing for that. Yeah.
Yeah. So vertical video is the thing. And so Reels in the past, like probably year or so, they've been pushed like crazy on Instagram, so much so that I think Instagram just had an update where every video just automatically becomes a reel. Just to kind of compete with TikTok and those kinds of platforms. But vertical video like is the future.
If I just make a vertical post, it'll automatically go to a reel?
Yeah, it should.
Interesting.
And I still like this, it's, they're still like, I think in the process of kind of updating it for multiple users. So like I always just go through the actual Reels posting system just to make sure that's what it is in the end. But vertical 1080 by 1920 vertical video. And it's, I don't know if you've experienced this, but like as a guitarist, like guitars suck for like vertical video because it's this like lengthwise instrument. So yeah. It's like, I'm like, oh cool, yeah, it's all vertical now. I can't do this like landscape stuff anymore. All right.
I find it like, do people want to see my picking hand or people do they want to see my fingers?
Yeah. And if you have like a square video, it's like, how do I crop that creatively to take up the full vertical space? So like, I know for Scramberg, like I'll take a square video of like one of our artists and it'll be the center of this rectangle is just the original square video. And then the top is the right hand and then the bottom is their left hand. So it's like you get kind of like three different views. I'm just trying to kind of maximize like the real estate on someone's phone. Just to get kind of like a full, you know, full coverage, so to speak.
Nice.
But yeah, man, Reels is the jam.
Does it make sense to post right to Reels and not do a post? Is that the thing?
Yeah, I think going forward, like I think Reels is Reels for everything.
Just Reels.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm afraid to post to TikTok because I hear too much Chinese like conspiracy, like like listening on my phone.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of all have that to a certain extent. I feel you. It's like
they're like
the cool part about
everyone in at TikTok in China is like huddled around like some super secret office. Like, hey, Nick's got his guitar back. Like, let's listen. What that guy's up? Yeah, I'm probably the last person that the secret agents in China are listening to. So I guess
let's get those jazz licks. Learn his secrets. I mean, the cool part about this whole kind of vertical video movement is that almost every platform has that on it now. So you can just take one video that you're going to post as a reel to Instagram and just repost that on YouTube, Facebook, TikTok, like just kind of populate all those different platforms. And, you know, there's nuances to each platform, which are interesting, but it's kind of this like standardized format now with this whole vertical thing. And so it makes it easier. So you don't have to like think about like certain kinds of content for different platforms. And that's a whole other conversation, but nice. Yeah, dude, it's a weird world, man. I back to the Riffified thing quick. Like I just started reposting all of my old Riffifieds as reels, because when they were posted originally, they were just like posts, and they're doing so much better now than they ever did in the past because reels are just being pushed so much by the algorithm and stuff. So definitely, like, even if it's like old videos of Ever Forthright or just like stuff that you did years ago, just I think reposting it, yeah, or just do, you know, you can find a cool reason, like, oh, Throwback Thursday, Flashback Friday, like here's a little throwback to something, and
because I felt like it Sunday,
yeah. The classic because I felt like it Sunday, you know. But it's true, like I think they really get a lot of reach, and again, back to that motivation thing, like it's cool to just see people who, like, because like you and I both, we're so familiar with our old content, our old videos from years ago, that we're like, why would I post that? It's ancient history. I'm not even the same person anymore. But like most people aren't familiar with those videos, you know, like we are. So I think there is a lot of value in resharing that stuff in the kind of current format that's being pushed by these apps. So
Some of my old stuff from even a year ago before I was doing the Noah Band, stuff, I think I have like, you know, 400 views on this post. Like, oh shit, I gotta pull this out from the from the graveyard. Like people can, yeah, man. People should hear this thing.
100%.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, it's nice to meet you. And
you too, dude. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So we'll let's make sure we stay friends now that we've actually talked.
Dude, 100%. I have so many more guitar questions to ask you that I'm trying to not be annoying about, but
so why sure we'll don't you can come back. I'm gonna take a note, like reschedule with Isaac, and we can have it be more guitar-y.
Sick. I would love it, dude.
Isaac for guitar chat.
Yeah, I've been, some riffs.
Yeah, I've been meaning to do that. Like we've kind of started this podcast just talking about, you know, whatever, just kind of saying hi and introductions and stuff. But yeah, eventually people are gonna be like, dude, licks, riffs.
Yeah,
theory.
It's what the people want.
Play that melodic minor, bro.
Yeah, we came here for one reason: melodic minor.
All right, man. So, anything else you want to plug?
My band. I don't think I've even said our name this podcast. We're called The World Is Quiet Here. Progressive metal. New album coming out end of this year, maybe early next year, but hopefully end of this year. If you like BT BAM, if you like The Human Abstract, if you like Ever Forthright, check us out. We have a new vocalist named Lou Kelly who is insane. If you like Mr. Bungle, if you like Zappa, you'll dig our stuff. So that's in the works. Riffified on YouTube. Like and subscribe. That's it. That's what I got.
Cool, man. All right, brother. Yeah, I'll catch you soon then.
Awesome, dude. Talk soon, man.
Later.
Bye.
Yo, good meeting you, man. Bye. Be safe.
You too, man.